The Wednesday Bookmark on Family Radio CHRI. Each week, we introduce you to something new, something that'll make you think, something that might change your life. Here's this week's author interview on the Wednesday Bookmark on Family Radio CHRI.
Joining us this week for the Wednesday Bookmark is Eric O. Jacobson. Eric is senior pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Tacoma, Washington. He's the author of a handful of books and numerous articles exploring connections between the Christian community, the church, and traditional neighborhoods. Eric is also co-host of the Embedded Church podcast. We're going to talk this morning about his book. It's called Three Pieces of Glass, Why We Feel Lonely in a World Mediated by Screens. So appreciate your time this morning, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the purposes of this book, you've defined belonging as, quote, a sense of fitting in with a particular place, a particular group of people, and or with the ethos or narrative of a place. You also describe belonging early on in the book as an issue of organized complexity. Let's start there. What does all of that mean exactly?
Yes. So really what I'm trying to do there is come up with a kind of counter term for the problem of loneliness, which is endemic in our society right now. Everyone's aware that loneliness is a big problem. It seems to be a growing issue, but it's now being studied not just as a psychological problem or a mental health problem, but as a public health problem, because people who are chronically lonely have a greater chance of mortality than obese people and people who smoke heavily. So it's a big problem. And what I've noticed is when we think about how to solve that problem, our minds immediately go to relationships. We don't have enough relationships in our lives. And so I think that's true, but I think it's more complex than that. I think we really are not only disconnected from one another, but we're disconnected from the places that we live. And even what I call kind of a story. So belonging is a very rich and sort of complex idea, and it's elusive as well. And so that's why I have kind of a organic complexity description. It's just to pick up a lot of the nuances of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and you actually reference an article in one of the chapters written by the late Marina Keegan in Yale Daily News called The Opposite of Loneliness, and you offer some reflections on that. So is belonging the opposite of loneliness then, do you think?
Yeah, that's how I'm thinking about it. And if I could just make it a little bit more nuanced for from a Christian standpoint, halfway through kind of writing the book, I figured out that belonging is a very attractive word in some ways. People, when they hear it, they recognize they want that. And that Keegan article, certainly she talks a lot about it, wanting to belong. But I realize there's a kind of negative kind of belonging. It's not always good. So a lot of the belonging that we tend to think of tends to be good for us and feels good and whatnot. But there's a kind of belonging that can have an opposite effect, like the belonging to a high school clique, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You can really want to belong to that. If you do belong to it, you can only belong if you exclude others. It's a very insecure belonging. You know, if you gain weight or can't afford nice clothes, you know, you worry about getting kicked out of the group. And so it doesn't tend to bring out the best in us. And so in my book, I make a distinction between kingdom belonging, which is the kind of belonging that we encounter in the Bible and the kind of belonging that God wants for us. And worldly belonging is the kind of belonging that's on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, the defining characteristics of kingdom belonging versus worldly belonging. Like, how does the gospel play into this arena?
Absolutely. So kingdom belonging is kind of inclusive. You know, it's not restricted according to external characteristics. I call it covenantal, meaning that it's based on a promise. It's unconditional in that sense. You're not anxious about being kicked out. It's not driven by a need for a common enemy to turn against. You know, it's it kind of brings out the best in us rather than conforming us to some external characteristics. So kingdom belonging is the kind of belonging that I think we tend to be drawn to. One thing that I try to make clear, once I define kingdom belonging and worldly belonging in terms of opposite set of characteristics, I want to be clear, and this is a little bit of the Dutch Calvinist influence on my work, that when I use those terms, sometimes the church doesn't exhibit kingdom belonging. We can slip away from that if we're not paying attention. And sometimes the world or the secular world can pick up characteristics of kingdom belonging, even though they're not explicitly, you know, naming Jesus or coming from a biblical standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, like a really good sports team with a really compassionate and good coach can really do good things for the kids on that team in terms of including them and encouraging them and helping them, you know, really support one another and all that kind of stuff. I would name that as a kind of like common grace kingdom belonging, even though it's not a Christian team. And you could have a church that's really monocultural and judgmental and all those kinds of things, and that would be a church that sort of slipped into worldly belonging and that's kind of in some ways moved away from the standard that God had set for them.
So the three pieces of glass that you refer to in the title of this book, just to be clear on that, are the car windshield, the TV, yep, and the smartphone. And you, yeah, believe that each represent, and you unpack this in such an interesting and historical way even in the book, each of those kind of represent a step toward where we have arrived at today. Like, take a moment and say a word about the specific impact of each of these so-called three pieces of glass.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you kind of have to work, you know, from the most recent one to get it, because a lot of people recognize the cell phone as being somewhat problematic. As much as it's good, it also tends to reduce our face-to-face human contact. You know, you're in all these situations where people are together in a room and they're all staring at their phones, and everyone, or a lot of people, feel like, there's something wrong with that. Why are we looking at our screens instead of looking at one another? You know, we've chosen this sort of screen-mediated communication as opposed to direct face-to-face communication. And that's, people understand that. I just walk it back 50 years or so to when the automobile, you know, we really moved towards a more automobile-dominated society where you really needed a car to get around from place to place. And one of the observations that I make is that when you're driving your car, you don't treat other drivers very well, typically. A lot of really nice people do unkind things to other drivers. And the reason for that is I don't think we see one another as human beings in that context. We see each other more as competitors for lane space or parking spaces. We see each other as threats. You know, a person who's been drinking too much or is sleepy can really endanger ourselves or our family when they're driving a car. And so we tend to kind of dehumanize the people that we encounter when we're driving our cars, and that dehumanizes us at the same time. And so, you know, that was one step. And then, you know, we redesigned our communities around the car so that we're no longer sitting on the front porch engaging our neighbors as they walk the neighborhood, but we've got these large garage doors out front. We're sort of inside the house, and instead of interacting with our neighbors like we used to, we turn on the TV and have these sort of quasi-social relationships with TV characters or reality show characters. Mm. And those relationships aren't real relationships, and so they tend to be, I call them kind of voyeuristic. We get all worked up about these things, but they never make any demands on us. And so each one of these pieces of glass, I would say, kind of diminish our humanity in certain respects. They keep us from the sort of natural way that we treat each other with dignity and compassion. We can treat each other with dignity and compassion when we see each other face to face. And so it's a trend that I think is problematic, and it's behind this spike in loneliness, I believe. And so it's something that needs to be addressed if we're going to think about, you know, pulling back away towards a sense of belonging.
Hmm. Chapter 14, called Busy, was one of my favorite sections of the book. And in particular, this concept of, and I don't even know how to pronounce it, but is it acedia, acadia?
Acedia.
Acedia. And yeah, you talk about the roots of how it connects to why we're so busy today. Can you say a word about that?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting connection. I didn't sort of initially discover this. This was like Kathleen Norris and some other contemporary thinkers have been making this claim. But acedia is the Latin word that's behind the sloth is one of the deadly sins. And so we tend to think of sloth as someone who's just too lazy to get out of bed or just can't get any work done, they're just moving slowly. But what these more recent observers have noticed is there's another form of sloth, which is sort of frenetic busyness, where we just fill our days with frenetic activity. And part of that is because we're really deeply dissatisfied. We can't figure out how to sort of dwell in place and accept the life that we have and sort of the commitments and the limitations on ourselves. So we just run around trying to fill everything with activity. And so a lot of people are diagnosing acedia as sort of a contemporary malaise, that we are really, part of the reason we're so busy isn't because life has gotten more complex, but we've just made it more complex in this sort of inability to settle down. And so we need to sort of recognize that there's a there's sort of a spiritual core to the problem before we can really get at how could we solve the problem of being just overly busy all the time.
Obviously, we just rushed through some of this content, but there's so much more depth in the book. In the final section, I want to close on this note. You offer some ideas on how we can push back against the crisis of belonging. Leave us with a few nuggets in that respect.
Sure. So one of the things is proximity, which is one of my favorite words. One of the things that especially the cell phone, but even all those pieces of glass do is they seduce us with this idea that we could be connected with anyone, anywhere, that distance doesn't matter. You know, I can live really far away from where I work. I can connect with somebody, you know, with my cell phone is across the globe. And it's really seductive, this idea that we can make all these connections with exciting events and exciting people really, really far away from us. And one of the things I say is that's going to be ultimately unsatisfying. We really might do better to think in terms of proximity. You know, who are my actual neighbors? Where is our church located, and who is located near us, and draw some circles that can sort of constrain our movement, you know, and think in terms of how do we prioritize the people that are physically proximate to us. And that leads to a whole richer set of relationships where you see each other not just in transactional terms, you know, this is a grocer that sells me groceries, but this is a neighbor who I know their kids, or we have other layers of relationship. That can help our belonging. The other one is I talk about design elements, particularly designing communities to make walking a feasible mode of transportation. So much of our post-World War II design has been really designed about getting cars around and huge parking lots, and all those things really work against making it convenient and easy to walk. And so trying to design communities where walking is more possible is one of those strategies. There's something called placemaking, which is somewhat of a vague, but trying to connect with the people and the places and the stories where we live and create places where people can gather and they can, kind of connect with one another. And then the last one is what I call local culture. And it's really paying attention to the stories of where we are. There's so much rich history everywhere that we are. And just learning that history is part of how we build connections, not just to the place, but to the people of that place. And anyway, that's just a quick summary of those are four strategies I think will help us establish a strong sense of belonging.
Yeah, it's a great analysis. As I told you off the air, the book was really interesting. There's so much here. Very, very interesting book. Again, we're out of time, but we've been talking about Three Pieces of Glass, Why We Feel Lonely in a World Mediated by Screens. Eric Jacobson, our guest this week for the Wednesday Bookmark. Really enjoyed the book. Thanks so much for your time this morning, Eric.
Oh, thanks for having me.
The Wednesday Bookmark on Family Radio CHRI. To find out more about this week's bookmark or hear the author interview again or to discover previous books highlighted on the Wednesday Bookmark, go to chri.ca.